and welcome to Season 4, Episode 3 of The Dive. I'm Azale, joined by Mark Z and
Kobe.
It's not Kobe.
Whoa.
I'm filling in for Kobe.
We have a new special guest.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah, I've never sat in the middle chair.
Yeah.
Kobe's always here. I'm wondering if, like, my posture is right. Like, how does he... why does he always like the middle seat so much? I'm going to try and learn throughout the episode.
It'll be a bit of an exploration.
Yeah.
You can update us periodically.
I realize right now I look really small. So something, like, something is off.
Yeah, you do look like a child. What's going on? Like,
I have these two giants.
Raise your chair up or something. What
know.
Are you doing?
I think I'm just going to stay like...
It looks like one of those Photoshops, you know, like the Tyler 1 things where they shrink him next to people.
You just got to lower your chair so you can just see your eyes over the top of the laptop.
Because I'm... like, I'm
where's
tall, if not taller than Kobe.
Where's
I don't know what's happening. I'm comfortable, so I'm going to stay like this. But
It's just like one of the MasterCard trophies, you know? The player of the week.
Little shrunken Jack.
It's mini Jack.
Yeah, congratulations to Sven for winning that one this week.
Yeah, big congrats. All right. To open it up, clip came out. You know, it was on Reddit. It was on Twitch and whatnot. Reckless talking about the new champions and essentially how he felt, you know, Kai'Sa and Saya, that was the only thing you could play last year. They were so strong. And now you really can't even play those because Aphelios and Senna are so much better. And just the idea basically that there's this power creep with new champions coming out and you can only play the newest stuff. What's your guys' take on this?
Yes, but also no, because I think what also happens is like Saya and Kai'Sa got nerfed a bunch as well over the course of last season, which is why I think some of that stuff happens. Like MF is now the next hotness, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not like...
And that's an old champion.
That's an old, old champion. So I think what often happens is new champs come out. I don't know. This is my conspiracy theory, tinfoil hat, you know? Riot wants people to play the new champs, so they're very aggressive about making sure that they... if they come out weak, they buff them to make them strong.
Mm-hmm.
And then they oftentimes, you know, the balance team starts pruning off the things that don't feel critical to champion identity and, you know, like the Akali treatment, basically.
Sure. Yeah.
Maybe not to that level every single time, but I think very understandably, Riot wants people to play the new champions, but that doesn't mean those other ones get completely pushed out. Like, if that was true, why is MF being played, one of the original 20?
Yeah. Well, I think right now, and this is, I was on the balance team from basically January of 2019 until. Week 8 of the LCS.
I was on the balance team.
Well, I'm going to give you context, Mark. anytime you try and talk yourself off, Mark's like, rrr, 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 I was a coach team record. When they were losing. But I think Reckless hits on a few correct current notes, like you mentioned in the yes or no. Like Aphelios and Senna are the two most recently released marksmen, and they're the two strongest in the patch right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that like stands out like a sore thumb of, hey, these two recent results are OP. I'll come back to that a little bit because the season 9 thing that he mentioned with Saya and Kai'Sa, Saya was released in 2017 and Kai'Sa was released in 2018, and they were in meta at the end of 2019.
Like, were any marksmen released in 2019 though?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think Kai'Sa might have been the most recent one.
I think
Chilla, Aphelios,
yeah.
And Senna.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Kai'Sa stayed like pro viable longer than most champions would. Like that's almost an exception to the rule. But Saya has been in and out of the meta for a while. And also the most played AD carries in season 9 were actually Ezreal and Lucian, even though Lucian and Ezreal like occasionally are flexible picks. So like, yes, those were the two meta AD carries at Worlds. And yes, right now, Aphelios and Senna are the two best. But I also think that Aphelios and Senna are getting nerfed in patch 10.3, which we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. And I know that more Aphelios nerfs and like clarity updates are eventually going to be on the way. Like being able to see the second gun that Aphelios has will be hopefully very useful for people who want to know what's happening.
So you don't get swapped purple gun ulted instantly and you're like, wow, I didn't have
and
any chance.
Then in terms of like why I think this happens, like I dealt with this when I was trying to balance like Qiyana, for instance, is there's these champions that sometimes like you're not going to actually be really good at the champion until you're like 50 games into it. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people think they can pick up a champion and be good in like 10. Sometimes you can, but it's closer to 50. And a lot of the way that these champions get balanced is it's around the experience that people are going to be having in game. And pro players and challenger players can get to 50 games in like 2 days. Whereas for most people, it's a process of several months. So that does create this overtuned gap where pro picks end up being OP. And also, kind of the only way to see if a pick is going to be pro, as much as you can analyze and try and figure it out, is to see what happens in pro. Mm-hmm. So like a champ hits its ceiling and then it gets nerfed. Some champs are like way too slow. Like a Kali's taken like a year and a half to be nerfed down to that point. But yeah, that was just like a mess of thoughts. I do think that right now Aphelios and Senna are too strong, which needs to change. And that's why I think Reckless is frustrated.
Yeah. I think your point though about like Varus always comes back into the meta is like, oh, we need a AD carry who can catch people out. There we go. Ashe has been played a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Like these are old, old, old champions.
And look at some of the other roles, right? You know, look at the most popular junglers. There's such old champions. Lee Sin, Gragas,
yeah.
You know, Jarvan, Elise. These champions have been around forever and are still the most popular. It's not as though Kindred came out and immediately has been the only champion in the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
What I do think he is right about, and this is something that I think, you know, players latch onto and it makes it feel frustrating, is that when a new champion comes out, the way that it is going to be coded is that oftentimes it feels like they get preferential treatment in interactions, right? So one thing I remember actually thinking about was when Camille came out. And when Camille came out, I had played a lot of Shen. And so if you Shen taunt into a Camille hookshot, I was like, oh, I'm taunting you. I'm going to taunt this guy out of his hookshot.
Right.
But the way that it's coded is that Camille will actually stun you out of your taunt. So you lose the taunt, you lose the damage, and he's not taunted.
And what happens with like Gragas body slam?
So I'm not sure about every interaction, but I have noticed that with newer champions in interactions like this, they usually get preference because it is coded more recently. And so it's like just the way that it is being coded.
Yeah, either it's updating faster or like,
I mean, even like a hitbox is bigger. It's more forward compared to like your hurt box, I guess.
This isn't like an intentional, you know, like mischievous thing. This is just, I think the coding is probably improved and you know, more streamlined. And as a result, the newer champions often get precedence in these interactions. And so that has always been a bit of a frustration of mine when a new champion comes out and I feel like, ooh, I outplayed this guy and I taunted him out of his hookshot.
I just gotta say, I feel really involved in this conversation. Like, I hear Zale talking, I'm looking at Zale, and I want to go talk to Mark. There's a lot of booking back and forth. Like,
oh, I thought you were going to say, as a foreign balance person, you're like, as the middle seat.
Oh, no, definitely not. No. I'm just thinking, like, maybe this is why Kobe likes the middle seat. It keeps you engaged in
the
conversation.
You're in the action.
Yeah, if he's on the end, he's got to sleepy or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
True.
So but, that was a tangent. I think what you're saying is still a good point.
I think the other thing that happens, too, is, like, when one of these champs comes out that is overloaded...
Yep.
Like, or that got reworked like an Aatrox. Sometimes it feels like they stay in the meta forever, which is kind of what happened with Kai'Sa, I think, where it took a really long time to get enough nerfs to knock her out. It's happened with Akali. It's happening with Aatrox right now, where it just is like, okay, I get it. They're really strong. They just came out. They're going to nerf them eventually. And then the other champions will rise back up. And then you play like a whole season of them. And you're like, where was the variety? And I think sometimes that is more likely to happen with a new champion or one that got reworked than like, oh man, we had Varus in meta all year long out of nowhere because other things are going to move around him.
Yeah, it also depends what lens you're looking at it through, because the game is balanced around the four tiers of play, pro, like elite, high elo, and average elo. So it's like, even
what about dumpster tier?
Even some of the
that's average.
What about me? Yeah. No one's balancing around me.
That's lumped in. You're in the
dumpster is the average mark.
So wait, no. Riot Games officially says
no,
average tier is dumpster.
It's like 90% of the players. It's actually
or dumpster. Come
on, Jim. Are good. Anyway, what is it? We were trying to find names here. I think average. There's an article that releases it and that has like a good
maybe
name.
New player or something.
Not even new player. It's actually just the like majority of players. But anyway, like Silas, when he is OP and pro, like we look at it from the pro lens and we watch all these pro games and we say, damn, like Silas is great in every game. But like in order to be good at Silas, you need such an insane mastery over the game because contextually, you need to decide which ultimate is best, know the casting paradigm for that ultimate, and pull that ultimate off properly. And the kit used to also have like 5 auto attack resets and all these like sick animation cancels. So for basically everyone who plays that champion, he was weak. except
if you're Caps.
Except if you're a pro, right? Or if you're a challenger or someone who's put several thousand games into League of Legends. And there's so much exposure to the pro game. Like, it's our lives. We see it all the time. It looks crazy to us. But then, like, the average silver player or even gold player picks up Silas, and they're probably going to lose with them until the recent changes. So it depends on the lens. And obviously, when we look at the pro lens, there's stuff that seems a little bit out of whack. And in patch 10.3, if Felios and Senna are getting little baby nerfs.
And that's always also why, you know, champions that are more mechanically difficult and complicated have that issue more. It feels like they're hanging around in pro longer because they may already be weak in solo queue for most players, if not almost all players, but they're still good for pros because they have such a mastery over them.
Ryze's ear a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
There's also some really weird stuff that happens, and this is more just like spitballing about like thoughts on balance. There's some weird stuff that happens with just because a champion is mechanically difficult to play and has a high skill cap doesn't necessarily mean that it will be a big thing in pro. I think a larger definition of what's good in pro is the champion's ability to invalidate counterplay. Yasuo is actually really hard to get champion mastery over. Yet, he is a champion that has a lot of counterplay at a very high level. Because he's the melee champion, he's inherently squishy. Like, there is, like, if you're really in tune, you can get out of that telegraph stuff. But, like, there was a time, if we think, like, 6 years ago, when Taric is an insanely easy champion to play, but he has a point-and-click stun. And there's nothing you can do about it. So he was a pro pick, right? So there's little things like that where it's not just the difficulty of the champion. And that's a really hard thing to evaluate, is, like, all the different things playing against, playing as, how much you can read them, how much you can counterplay them. It's, I don't know, it's hard.
Which is why I think Set, as a pretty simple champion, when he gets the nerf bat, gone from pro like that.
I agree.
And probably won't see him again because there is so much counterplay with Set. It's like a Garen. The only reason you see him is because he's so damn tanky, right? And when he's not, you know, at that crazy level of tankiness and kind of high stats, then they can disappear.
I think he can take one hit to his W because that thing's so nuts.
I actually think it's the regen and stuff. I'd rather see him have a really strong W because I actually think you can play around the W pretty easily on a lot of champions. I think he just needs to be able to die when he's low health.
I mean, it's the two things.
And in a
1v1,
he cannot.
It's because his W gets to be the 3.6 second cooldown, giving him like a 400 HP shield, and then his regen goes up during that shield. So one of those two things needs to go a little bit.
For sure. Yeah. I just think the W is more interesting than just regenning infinitely.
I hate the W. Having been hit by that, I'm like,
it looks pretty cool though. That's
cool.
You see that massive white 800 damage?
He goes Super Saiyan when he starts glowing. That's hype.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that was it.
What you got? Reports and honors.
I am going to report the LCK schedule for starting in February.
You're bored?
Yeah, I've really wanted to see LCK. It actually starts tonight. Mm-hmm. So SKT versus Damwon is going to be the first game. I checked last year. It started January 16th. Mm-hmm. It just was delayed like 2.5 weeks. That's why I'm reporting. It's just, it's a missing ping, like, report.
Yeah.
Where have you been?
Someone loaded into the rift late. LCK is late.
They're just stuck on the
loading screen. They're the jungler starting like level 1, like 10 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
All right, what about your honor?
I'm going to honor the LCK for starting tonight.
Okay.
I'm really looking forward to it being back. No, I'm going to honor, like, I'm looking forward to seeing the LCK cast this year. They just released, like, Pogcast, so it's going to be an LCK podcast that I'm going to try and listen to. I'm really looking forward to see Ejim Bryce also be the color caster for LCK. I worked with him with Worlds last year. He was, like, a really talented Aussie caster, one of many, like, several dozen Aussie casters that
it's
are really
the
good.
Accent.
Yeah.
It's all
something,
they have.
Maybe they talk a lot, like, something about that is creating good casters. But I'm just really looking forward for LCK to start and how Ejim is going to do.
Yeah, I think he's going to do really well.
So my honor, I'm going to honor Kobe. I love Sam Kobe Hartman-Kensler. He's irreplaceable on the dive. I miss him. I'm sad he's sick today.
Okay.
You know, there's just a not, void.
Something's missing.
Yeah. The dive is
someone in like a high chair. I'm moving this chair up.
So yeah, obviously feel better, buddy. I hope you're good when you see this come out later today. Know that I'm thinking he went down. And I'm going to report CLG. I think that one speaks for itself.
That's a fair one. There is 0-8 between Academy and LCS.
Oh, they lost.
I didn't even know that about the Academy that bad.
Yeah, they haven't won a game yet as an organization.
Wow. So
are there any specifics of why you're reporting?
Yeah, so specifically, I believe it was Kobe and Dash who went to their training facility in the off season,
and we all went.
Everyone went?
Not everyone, but Jad and I.
Me, Azale, Kobe, and Dash.
Yep. So Kobe and Dash were there, the two people. I don't have to do this.
Everyone except you got invited. Yeah. It specifically said Mark's not allowed.
Let me tell us what we heard.
Yeah. So what you guys heard at the CLG facility was that they were hyping up like, oh, Smoothie talks a lot. Mm-hmm. And our team is pretty quiet, and so this is going to be a good thing.
They did say that.
They did? Okay, I got that part right?
Yeah.
Thank God.
I would have loved if this was just completely inaccurate, and he's like, yeah, they said that they're going to... Anyway, go ahead, yeah.
And I'm reporting them for that just because it's one thing for, like, PR, you know, I think when people try and spin something in a positive way, but I don't think it sounded like PR based off the times I've heard this story, that they really thought that they were going to, like, that they were, like, the genius tier putting the puzzle pieces together. Like, if this guy talks a lot and these ones don't, they go like this. And it's like, no.
Oh, my God.
It's just, it just feels arrogant. It just, it like, that. This is something that's been this player's problem for the longest period of time. That every team he's been on, when they leave, players or staff or whatever, you know, you kind of hear he talks too much. And it's not even like, oh, hi. When he talked a lot, people were like, everything came out clean. You knew exactly what you need to do. Mm-hmm. He was a great leader. That's not, it's like he talks a lot and it's a little jumbled and maybe frantic and it's hard to play with. And then you say that, like, we're going to use that to our strength. Not that we're going to help, you know, like hone that little problem. And, you know, like, it just seems to me like, oh, we're the geniuses who are going to fix the problem that this guy had with three other organizations. I just can't get behind that. Like, it just feels, it just always rubs me the wrong way when people think they're going to fix something that everyone else couldn't fix or something.
You had a different analogy for this. I think you were ranting about this on the weekend. What was it, like, somehow turning a weakness into a strength?
Yeah, but I don't remember what I said. Was it funnier then?
It was funnier then. Damn. Yeah. But unlike you, I don't have that perfect memory of what other people have heard. No, but okay, cool.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Oh, it's coming back to me. We're in the meeting.
All right, Mark's going to think about it while you do your report.
While you think about it, yeah. Well, and I was just going to say also, I mean, you can't pin it all on Smoothie. I don't
put it on Smoothie at all.
So that's fair. So that's why
I'm
reporting
CLG. Yeah. I'm reporting CLG for thinking that, like, bring in another Korean player when you think communication is your weakness, and then you bring in a player who has been criticized for his communication, saying that his problem is actually going to be your solution.
Yeah.
That's bad thinking from an organizational level.
Yeah. I am going to report teams that are drafting no engage. Because it is tilting me constantly in the LCS to see these team comps where people are blind picking Tahm Kench as their support. And then they're like, all right, we'll have Aatrox top and Lee Sin jungle. And then they fall slightly behind and like, well, what do we do? Guess we can't do anything. I hope they mess up later on. Like, there's no way to start fights. And I've seen this happen a bunch of times in the LCS now. There are so many good tanks in the meta right now between support and Ornn, right? Yes, there's not a lot in top lane, but Leona, Nautilus, Ornn, like that right there gives you so many engage options. And I feel like we've been seeing this so many times where you're so dependent then on having a really strong early and mid game because your way to win the game is to then go to the objective where they have to fight you from a position of power. And then you kill them. That's actually how you engage, and that's how you play with those comps. And they can work, yes. It's not that they're horrible, but teams are not playing them at a level that I think it's smart. It's so much easier to execute on these engage compositions. Rakan is another great example because you get to choose when you fight, especially when you're going up against a team that does not have any of that. And I just think it's really being overlooked in the draft, and people are tunneling way too much on lane matchups and forgetting what happens outside of lane. And I think that has been something that has kind of been a frustration of mine watching.
I think the only team I'd like to see with Tahm Kench is C9. Like when they played with Falcon. But again, like that's because they were able to get lane advantages and then actually use TK to jump from side to side.
Well, and just as a team, we've seen them never have a problem picking a fight. For like the last year and a half, I've never been like, ah, man, C9 just can't get anything going. It's like, if anything, they got too much going.
And I mean, you know, for example, with C9, one of the things they have done is draft Camille a couple times, right? You know, so that's a way to, again, start fights, right? You know, if you it's not that you have to have it from your start position, but you have to have some way to do it, or you have to be supremely confident in your early game. And to your C9 point, guess what? They have the highest CSD in the league on Zven, the second highest CSD in the league on Licorice, and Niski's a damn good laner too, right? Yeah. You're having these super aggressive lanes, and Pantheon was another mid lane pick that they had, right? They're drafting Engage from other ways, and I think that's totally fine then. But you can't go like LeBlanc, Lee Sin, Aatrox, Tahm Kench support, and a Senna, and then go lose your lanes and expect to win the game. There's just nothing happening there. So that's my report.
Okay.
Accepted.
My honor is going to be Kumo, because I think I have been really down on him, you know, coming into the season. I didn't expect a lot. Mm-hmm. After week one, I was expecting even less. And I think he had a really good week. I think he actually played quite well against some pretty tough opponents. And I think that, you know, that does bode well for him and his career. I know their team is not doing that well, but I do think that Kumo actually really stepped up. So, you know, if I'm going to be quick to criticize, I want to also be quick to compliment and say that I think he actually really turned it around and played well.
Agreed.
Sweet. I like it. I remembered my comparison, by the way.
Okay, what is it?
It's pretty bad. It's pretty flamey. Do you want me to do it?
Look at the smile on your face. You want to do
like,
it.
Well, no, I'm just like,
if you don't want to do it, you're going to do it somehow. Like, you're going to either tweet it or you're going to wait until Hotline League.
Now.
So, right, like,
fine. I'll give it. It
as
was,
long as it's not, like, offensive.
It's not offensive.
Okay.
It was basically, like, you try changing a tire on a car, but you put a new flat one on, and then you say, no, this is better because it matches all my other tires, which are also flat. That's the kind of, like, logic it feels like to me.
Yeah.
I think that it could have worked and still has a chance. Yeah. Four flat tires will never work.
Depends what you
but
need
it
to
was,
do.
But it was a good...
Unless you're trying to mess up your rims. What if that's the goal? You know, then the flat tires would be great.
Yeah.
We got patch 10.3 coming out here pretty soon. Jungle experience is finally getting changed. You excited?
Yeah. Although... I've been having a little bit more fun in the jungle this week.
You have been. Yeah. I have been hearing occasionally,
yeah.
Kobe, come watch this.
Yeah. I mean, Kobe and I have been trying to test like ways to survive in the new jungle, and it's a little mini game. I found Trundle to be actually pretty good, like the currently buffed Trundle.
Mm-hmm. Jat's goal in playing League of Legends nowadays is not to be the best. It's to find the dumbest way to still win.
Yeah.
That's all he ever does. He's like, center roaming with double Omni Stone.
Yeah, fiddle Leona bot lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's Trundle. That's how far he's been.
Trundle is going to be a pro pick here, Mark. Yeah. Your analogy sucks.
Trundle's been good in the past, not necessarily the way I'm playing him. So let me explain. The jungle itself, how much you've struggled in the jungle has actually... scaled a little bit with your elo.
Mm-hmm.
So the higher elo people are adapting faster, generally just because they've played more games.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of the jungle misery that I was experiencing is because I hadn't adapted yet, in the sense that like I hadn't gotten my 30 or 40 games in to really learn like what I should be optimizing. And it takes a lot to, like, sure, you know, right, I should be prioritizing Gromps and Scuttle Crabs and objectives and like turrets, and deprioritizing Krugs and Raptors and stuff like that. And once that's kind of all processed, I thought like Trundle's such a good pick for this, and I've been finally executing across like 15 Trundle games. What's cool about this is I feel like I've already kind of caught up to the experience that I used to be getting with being able to contest a lot of Scuttlecrabs because Trundle's such a good duelist, being able to farm early jungle so easily and get like a decent level 3 gank off with the buffs to Pillar and W in terms of move speed and slow.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so fast at killing objectives.
Mm-hmm.
So next patch, when jungle experience is going up again, I think Trundle will still be good, even though they're not necessarily buffing Gromp. Just for those of you who haven't read the changes or don't want to, like... Overall, each camp is going to have about 10 more experience. That's because your jungle item bonus is going to go up. But Krugs is one camp where it was already kind of the right play for most junglers just to kill the two Krugs and then run away and not wait for all the little splitty dudes.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of the purpose of the camp is it'll be a high reward slow camp. So they actually took a little bit of experience out of the first one and put all of it into the medium and small Krugs. And then overall, the junglers will actually be a little bit higher level. So... that's going to be good. For those of you who are wondering, I've been going Bloodrazor Trundle. I think it's really good because you just hit dragons really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And you get attack damage from your Q anyway, so the attack speed has more benefit. And the like thing you should focus on in team fights is don't worry about picking your target. Just stand next to someone that they want to kill and kill the person that's trying to kill your friend. Don't spend all this time chasing people around. When they dive you, pillar the rest of their team and just hit the guy right in front of you. Very successful. Blood Racer Triforce.
Then I overheard you talking about this. I played a Trundle game yesterday. I went 15-2.
It's good, right?
Yeah. You. One of the craziest things is actually just how fast you kill turrets. I know you mentioned objectives.
Oh, man, yeah.
Because your chomp bonus damage works on it. You have an auto attack reset and fat attack speed from your W. Plus, I actually did the Blood Razor build. But I was so fed that I was just flashing on their carries and one-shotting.
That's what happens when you go Blood Razor build. You give that fed. It's really good.
It was actually really fun. Yeah. And they had a Scion in the game, so that's what made me think about it.
Yeah.
They picked a Scion top, and I was like, huh.
Ooh,
there's so many stats. There's yeah. so many melee supports in the meta too. Like if Leona or Nautilus, Stoneplate and Aftershock, you literally wait for their Aftershock to proc, press R on them, and it doesn't matter that you haven't built tank items, you're tanky.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, it feels really powerful, and I'm going to keep doing that. So that's my jungle update.
Yeah, for me, the kind of big thing that I'm noticing is some more nerfs to Akali, right? You know, mm-hmm. Akali had basically been 100% presence or close to it as mostly
in almost
just
all
getting,
bans.
Yeah, almost all bans. Every top laner you talk to is just complaining about this champion 24/7 as far as the pro level. So I think this should really kind of change it. It's the R is the biggest change to me. The fact that you can no longer use the R as an escape, you have to target an enemy champion, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to ult to someone. So maybe you could do something tricky where you like E away and then you ult back to them and you shroud and whatever. But like you can't just use your R1 as an escape when a gank comes through. You can use the R2 still as a targeted dash, I do believe. But then you have to wait for the cooldown between the R1 and the R2. So your escape is much weaker. You also don't have permanent move speed in the shroud. It's decaying move speed for over 2 mm-hmm. seconds. So those two things alone, I think will really change a lot. The Q costing 20 more energy at early level is also really, really big.
And 20 more at max level.
Yeah.
It's just more expensive.
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems like these are some pretty significant nerfs. You're going to have a much harder time to actually get the push early levels, which is a lot of that. And you're going to be much less safe. So that is really big. There is the quirky Azir buffs, which I was kind of concerned about because I just don't want to see that a lot in the meta.
Yeah.
But when I actually looked at the changes, I don't think they're that big. Quirky is like W damage buffs where, you know, they want you to be rewarded if you use it more aggressively. But I just don't really think that is going to be the thing that pushes it in.
Mm-hmm.
The Azir one is kind of interesting because it's just the width of the ultimate wall that they're increasing.
Mm.
So maybe pros can utilize this in such a way that you're like fully blocking off a choke. If it like changes some breakpoint like that, where it's like now you actually can't cross X threshold,
sure,
then maybe it'll really push it back in. But otherwise, again, I don't think this is so big. I was just really nervous when I heard that they were getting buffed, but seeing the actual buffs themselves, I'm like, yeah, it's okay.
I think like the Akali change is the one that is, I think, the biggest on the patch by a pretty significant amount. Mm. The other nerfs and changes that came in are like Leona losing a little bit of damage scaling. Like 5 per level mm-hmm. on her W, and E got hit by a flat amount by 10.
Mm-hmm.
Misfortune has like slightly less attack speed buff. So like, I feel like these are relatively small changes that won't disrupt the meta too much for pro play.
Yeah.
And outside of Akali potentially, like you already said, jungle, maybe you'll see it a little bit more.
There's a lot of popular champions, though, that are getting nerfed, right? Like,
yeah.
Set is getting hit. Mm-hmm. I think Set's nerfs are actually fairly big. You know, 2 more seconds on the cooldown. The base damage is going down at higher levels of Haymaker. He's losing health regen, which is one of those subtle things that actually makes a huge difference.
Oh, I did not see the base health regen.
So, like, base health regen is one of those things that you, like, don't even notice it, but you just lose a lot more because you just have less health when you're staying in an extended lane. That's really big. I actually think the 20 shield off level 1 scrap shield is really big for Rumble 2 because you don't go W until, you know, last, right? Like, that is your last skill. So having played a lot of Rumble, that is something that is really impactful for your trades in lane. That is one of the most kind of powerful things about it is you have this overheat flame spitter and you're running at them with your scrap shield on. And, you know, if you're taking 20 more damage every time you're doing that kind of thing, you know, there's more mm-hmm. ability to actually fight yeah. back. So I'm kind of excited about some of these changes because there's a lot of nerfs on the popular champions.
Yeah.
But a lot of them don't seem so insane. So I'm hoping that this doesn't mean Rumble's dead. It means Rumble can get some play. And I'm hoping, you know, we still can see stuff situationally, except for Akali, who is probably dead.
That's what we keep saying. We keep hoping.
Just bless any designer who tries to make this champion like not a pro problem while still getting solo queue. It just seems like the hardest job ever. But in terms of like your rumble point, I think magnitude wise, that is actually a pretty big point. Like reading nerfs, whenever it is a third max, which rank one gets hit, that ends up being an issue for like a long time. It's actually, sure, it's only 20 shield, but it's in a sense 25% less powerful as a shield for most of the game that matters.
And you lose move speed too.
Yeah, so that's big. And I'm curious to see. I don't think the Aphelios nerf will be enough to take him out of pro pick ban for 10-3. I think he'll need more in 10-4 or later. And I'm really curious to see what happens with Senna. Because these are very clearly saying, let's maybe even buff support Senna, but let's nerf AD carry Senna. The fact that, like, by 20 to 25 minutes, I've been tracking it during pro games, is about when Senna hits 40 souls. And that's when you hit 650 range, which makes you like Caitlyn range, which is something that pro players are very comfortable navigating teamfights with. Not getting drops on cannons is going to like cut that in half. Like, I'm actually really curious what the soul number is going to be for Senna at 20 or 25 minutes.
Freak was doing the math, and that's around what he told me. I may be misquoting a bit, but it was about, he thinks that the minion souls you get as an AD is literally going to be like half or even less. I think he might have even said it's even less.
Yeah, so unless you're getting a bunch of kills, which doesn't happen in pro.
Unless you're trading a bunch, which also doesn't usually happen in pro.
Yeah, you're not picking up many souls. And that, if you're running around as a 550 or 600 range Senna in the mid game, rather, sorry, 600 range Senna versus 650 or 700, that actually makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Well, so what's interesting about that too is, in the second week, I don't think I saw nearly as many rapid-fire cannons built on Senna, if any.
Yeah, I have a thought on that. I think rapid-fire cannon is probably wrong.
I think it was wrong. But now I wonder if it becomes a little bit better if you're wanting to get that range and you're not getting as easily from souls. Maybe you actually want it now. Whereas I felt like it was a waste with souls because it was like, that's 2,600 gold to increase your range when it's already going up so much that you're outranging anyone, most people's threat range on your own. But now I'm wondering if it might actually help you get those glacial. If you're still going, maybe there's another playstyle too that emerges because maybe the uber long range glacial augment procking,
right?
Escape velocity, like, you know, like that play pattern can go, and maybe a new one emerges that's more oriented on just straight damage.
Yeah, and maybe we see some support Senna, right? Because we haven't really been seeing any of that in pro, right? And I think that's part of the hope, I think, of these changes is that it's a little bit better as a support, a little bit worse as an AD, and then maybe we see it a little bit more. Because I think it was intended to be both, right? Like, they're hoping that people would play it as both, and it feels like it's almost exclusively AD, even at least in the games I've been seeing on live.
Yeah, it's meant to be. And please, this actually, I'm not 100% on this, so don't like quote. It's like, right, definitely said this. I believe it was support primary, but it's cool if you can play it as AD.
Yeah.
But the fact that it is AD primary and in pro, it's cool if you can play it as support is opposite of what was intended. So I think we're going to continue to see changes until it is actually support primary with a flexible, like in a cool situation, become an AD carry. If that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're trying.
I feel like that happens so much, especially with top laners and junglers.
It's like, oh man, yeah.
This is a top laner.
Vi.
It's in the jungle now. And like, this is a jungler. It's like, I put it top. Yeah. It happens all the time between those two.
Yeah. I mean, Qiyana, another example,
Camille.
Right? Where people never, I don't think, really thought of Qiyana as being this jungler when it was when it was in development. But, you know, especially at the pro level, because people find these ways to make things work that are unexpected.
Yeah,
right.
Like the ability to jungle and use your stealth like really well and keep your health high enough is made Qiyana a viable pro jungler.
Yeah, and it's also why in solo queue, it's like the lowest win rate jungler because it's really hard to do. And people don't kite the camps well. And they do two camps and they're recalling. And I'm like, where's my jungler?
And again, to call back to an earlier conversation, the EQ with Water Blade's ability to void counterplay gives it a niched power in pro, which is less, you know, useful in solo queue because there's so much death anyway. It's like the ability to force a fight. Like, the dude's just going to walk into you most of the time.
Well, and
but in pro, that doesn't happen.
And pro falls up.
Mess up. Who
pro
cares?
Falls up better. If a jungler in pro gets a root in the bot lane with their Qiyana Q, the Braum's gonna flash forward auto queue instantly, you know, like they're gonna chain CC that and solo queue. You're like, I didn't even see that guy was ganking me.
I was gonna say he's probably still farming the lane.
the 80 carry didn't see you coming. You're Qiyana with no health 1v2 now.
it was the same thing, and I'm not on the dive that often, so I'm gonna say this now with Galio when
very special guest.
When you stopped being able when I actually made the change to not be able to flash while channeling Galio's W.
That was you?
That was really unpopular.
I was really expecting Mark to be like, I made the change.
Yeah, that was mega unpopular because everyone's like, man, that's like what I love about Galio. You know what else you should love about Galio is having a chance to win the game. Because when he had flash W, his solo queue winner, it was 42%, and he was still nearly 100% pick ban and pro. Mm-hmm. Now, he's an over 50% win rate champion because in pro, the threat range that was created by that flat W and the discipline to be able to not use it when it wasn't the right case, generate a kill and take something important off of it, that power was so high, but in comparison, that power is so incredibly low in solo queue that you can put so much more into that kit, which has been done in subsequent patches since it was taken out, that he's like a good champion again, who's not a pro problem because that mechanic was removed. And like that's one of the really difficult things about trying to balance champions for pro is oftentimes you have to take away something that feels fun. And you're trying to balance like, what is the overall life of this champion? Now Galio has played in solo queue like almost 10, like 5 or 10 times more than he was before that change was made. But yeah, this is a big like pat on the back.
Now I know who to direct my email that I had sitting in my
send
my
me that
draft.
Galio hate, please.
Yeah, because at Riot Jant.
I agree. Like it feels really bad because it felt so good to do that thing. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was something that kind of had to be done.
And this goes back to what I was saying about how base stat and regen changes and things like this, there is then room for those things that just make you win more without necessarily feeling like you're way stronger or realizing why you're winning more. I think another example of that was actually Rakan, right? Where they took away the instant alt W and flash alt W and these types of combos that pros could do so, so well. Yep. And that was not used nearly as well for most players. And it opens up room to buff the champion in other ways, which actually increases your chances of winning with it unless you're an elite.
You know, it's a great example of that being the case from the very beginning was Braum. You could never alt flash on Braum. And I always thought that was one of the smartest things they did to keep him as a not broken ass engage champion and more focused on like, I have big shield, you know, because if you could do the flash alt instant knockup like on people, he would be disgusting.
Yeah.
And he still is great, but he's been way more balanced. He's probably considered one of the most balanced champions in League. Or maybe low-key broken if you're Meteos and some other people who noticed how high his play rate is in pro. Mm-hmm. But it would be even more noticeable if you could do that.
True.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it might be time for some more Galio buffs. I was just checking in.
Yeah, you're looking in. You're looking in. Galio's not doing so well.
Maybe you should throw some AP
coming out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Jat retiring from casting. Back to the balance team. Coming next week. Jat retiring from the balance team. Back to casting.
Yeah. I thought there was a time where he was up around 53. He's looking like 49
your baby,
right
your
now.
Your baby is not doing so well. You know?
Galio.
You're sending your kid off to school. You know, he was in the immersion program. He was doing great. Now you're finding out he's getting held back.
What's going on? Okay, we're going to move on.
On to LCS. What takes have you got for me? Okay, hot takes for me on the LCS? You got any overreactions
for
me?
Do I want to go first?
Yeah, I was thinking, I got Galio brain right now.
Okay. So. I think C9 is making finals for sure. Is that hot? Or is that like, meh?
That's the thing that happens early on in the season. It's like we've seen 4 games and no one's going to be like, man, based on what we've seen, there's no way they're making finals. Like, clearly, based on the way they've looked, they make finals. But it would be a hot take, like, because I actually think there's a chance that that's wrong.
So they were power ranked second
for most people.
For at least for our aggregate on the dive and for a lot of people. So I would say that's not that hot of a take. What I want you to take a stance on is Cloud9 now better than TL when they get Broxa back? Like, is it better
in immediacy or?
No, I'm talking about in the end, right? You know, like, what's your thoughts on that? Because Cloud9 looks so dominant. They have around a 30-minute game time. The LCS average is over 5 minutes more than that. I'm trying to recall, but it's like 35:49, say, is LCS average, and theirs is like 30:09. Mm-hmm. And, you know, TSM is on the far end of the spectrum where they're like over 40-minute average game time. So with all these incredibly dominant stats with how good they're looking, with how fast it feels like they're clicking with Vulcan and Sven and everything's working out. Are they just the best team in the league? Is it time that we say, who cares what TL does? The TL has to catch up and prove that they're actually better.
I would say if they get back to the Smithy level from summer last year, C9 will still be better. I think Broxed needs to be an upgrade over Smithy. Because TL last year wasn't like god tier dominant in the regular season, and then in playoffs they were one game away from losing to C9. And I think how C9 looks right now, I think the bot lane is a massive upgrade. I think both positions together are like decent upgrades, and then they actually work really well together on top of that. I think Blaber, while probably going to have some moments where you notice the difference in his late game decision making compared to Summer Sven, that will be offset enough by bot lane upgrades or maybe a more explosive early game. So I would expect C9 to lose a game at one point this split from some stupid as hell Baron play that I would be like, Sven wouldn't have made that. But I'm accepting that with the other upsides that are coming. So I expect that to happen. And if TL is playing at the level that they are playing, they will lose to C9. If Brox is not an upgrade or shifts their play style to contest Blaber better. Like if Brox is able to just come in and put the shackles on Blaber and he can't make crazy plays and then double lift and Core JJ can just land, I still think they're better than Sven and Vulcan. But otherwise, I would say Summer TL won't cut it versus the C9.
So here's my take is that TL got worse with the current meta because I feel that laning matters less. So I think that in general, we have seen way more farm lanes than we did in the past, where it just feels like it's so much just about this swap top for Herald. Mm-hmm. The early dragon doesn't matter as much. It's just about pushing out the waves. And unless this actually advances and the meta somewhat changes, people are less interested in trading because all they're caring about is pushing out waves so that their junglers can play for objectives. And it feels like that is so much what the game is about. And I think that has hurt TL a lot compared to, you know, what they have looked like in the past. Because in the past, it just felt like they were so dominant with these lanes. I can't remember who I was having this discussion with, but it was like, you know, people are talking a lot about, oh, well, TL is not, you know, looking good just because of Sure and Fire, mm-hmm. right? And while there is an element of truth to that, right? You know, Sure and Fire, they're not as practiced with him. He's not going to be as skilled as Brox. All of these things are true. Your team is going to look worse. But in isolation, when you're looking lane by lane at their opponents, it feels like they should just win anyway, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like, why are you losing these teams when you have basically a double MVP bot lane, when you have, you know, one of the best, if not the best mid laner in the league, when you have a world champion top laner who's playing incredibly well, why are the lanes just feeling like they're farm lanes, right? And I do think it's somewhat to do with the meta. It feels so much like every lane is a farm lane. You push it out. You swap top at 8 or 10 minutes to try to get this rift. You push in so your jungler can try to like steal away some crabs and things like this. And it's mm-hmm. just that I think is working against them. And I know Doublelift mentioned something similar to this in an interview.
His post-game interview.
Yeah, where he was talking about, you know, the lane phase being shorter. But unless that changes, unless teams think that they can actually play it more aggressively and maybe more risky to try to get more of an edge, like, I'm doing, you know, Lane Kingdom, right? The show,
I've been
looking for these dominant lanes to highlight, and it feels like it's not as though people aren't laning well, but there have been very few really big CS advantages in any lane because teams are playing it kind of this ping pong style where you're just bouncing it back and forth.
I agree. I also think when they do have a jungler, we'll still see where the creativity can come from. Mm-hmm. My fear will be that 8-minute Rift Herald pushes us back to teleport 80 carries who were never willing to do aggressive stuff in lane. Because, like, that's the logical next step.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're already getting some of that.
When swapping between an 8-minute Herald and then the first dragon, you're taking between 5 and 7 minutes, and the second dragon is around 12 minutes. Like, if you don't have teleport on your bot lane, you're just going to get out-rotated and there's nothing you're going to be able to do. But the other side of that is, if junglers are a little bit more powerful, which is happening in patch 10.3, mm-hmm. Slightly more likely to be able to duel. Like, another thing that I think stifles aggression right now is the timing when laners hit six, how strong is the jungler?
Mm-hmm.
Because when most powerful laners hit six,
junglers die.
They will kill you if you gank them.
Yeah.
Like, they will just especially in top lane, like a level six Darius.
Ganker and Ekta.
Obviously, Darius isn't in pro right now. But
Syndra.
Like, yeah, Syndra will just one-shot the guy that ganks, and then like the E will push back the other mid laner, and it's like the gank never happened. So like that creates this other bit where you're then waiting for the jungler to hit six. Mm-hmm. That happens at 8 minutes, and instead of ganking, why not just go to Rift Herald? So when junglers hit six a little faster, I think we're going to see a little bit more variance in this gameplay, because being able to force an early back with early aggression, right? Being able to actually get kills and take early turrets when the other team's going to Rift, we will see more variability. But 10.2 actually feels pretty solved. I think all teams should have been doing 8 minute swap to Rift Herald with the teleport AD carry.
Mm-hmm. Those are great widespread meta points that I don't think actually apply to C9. They're the one team who is still making kills happen all the time. They have the fastest average game time in the league by a significant margin. And if the meta changes to allow for more explosive gameplay, they're probably the best positioned team to capitalize on something like that. Like, I know Sven and Vulcan are playing a more supportive style right now. And maybe that is helped by this swap. And so that way Blabber is more able to focus on his solo lanes. So maybe a meta swap does hurt them, but if it's just about junglers having a little bit more power to go make more ganks happen and stuff like that, I think that would still be good. The question, of course, still is how good will Brox be then when he shows up? But if Brox is not better than Smithy was in summer, I think C9's the team to beat in the league, even when Brox shows up.
Yeah, next week they play FlyQuest and Dig. So if they knock down the other 2 3-1 teams, then the question is like, more when will C9 lose? Yeah. A game.
Yeah. What's their week 4 and 5?
So their next 2 weeks, I was actually looking at this, are very difficult as far as the games go. So they have FlyQuest next Saturday. Then they have Dig on Sunday. So those are the 2 3-1 teams.
Yeah.
The following week, they have TSM. And then their Monday game, they have EG. So TSM as well as the 2 3-1 teams. So these are some of the very top teams in the league. They've already played TL. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they take down those three teams, they're probably undefeated in the first half, very likely.
Immortals knocks them off in game 9.
Yeah, it's possible. well, actually, they have CLG would be their 9th game.
Ooh, the CLG. So they have
CLG and EG would be their last two in the first round robin.
Yeah.
Which seems pretty likely that they would win those games unless, you know, there's a lot that can happen between now and then. But yeah, Cloud9 looking very good. I am hopeful that what you're saying is right as far as junglers increasing in power.
Yeah.
Maybe dissuading some of just the kind of back and forth farm lanes, or that it's just early season, some jitters and people not being willing to take as much of a risk, because we did see way more lane dominant performances, it felt like, last season. I'm hoping we're going to get back to seeing more of that spicy stuff.
What's your LCS take?
Oh, my LCS take. It kind of already got taken, but
was it the Rift Herald teleport stuff?
I was going to talk about Rift Herald and stuff.
Okay.
Do you have a separate one? Well, I think of something else to talk about.
Zale, I was going to make sure that mine was correct while you were talking. But
okay.
You guys not prepared.
No, my LCS take would be FlyQuest is going to make playoffs.
Okay.
Because before the season, I didn't have them as a playoff team. I had COG as a playoff team. I think there is an easy switcheroo to be done 2 weeks into the season that this is possible, but more so because of the way they're able to beat Dignitas. And like, take this with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
Even the way they lost to TL.
Yes.
They got smashed by TL, but it was while trying to do the right thing. Like, there is nothing necessarily wrong with them trying to take a fight at Rift Herald. There's nothing wrong with getting that pick on Doublelift after they'd lost the Rift Herald to try and stifle the Rift Herald play and make it so they couldn't get that play off. The execution just fell completely flat on its face.
Mm-hmm.
But then we got to see actually the game after them successfully correcting those mistakes. So they didn't tilt. They kept trusting each other. They stuck to the plan. That type of play, I think, can build them more towards long-term success. I'm not going to say they're going to be this 12-6 team.
Mm-hmm.
They're definitely going to lose games and look bad at times. But I can, at this point, easily see this team winning like 9 to 10 games, which would be good for playoffs.
It's funny, when I watch a player who I think is decent do something so horrendously stupid, it actually doesn't make me think worse of the player. Because I'm like,
if it's not like a super consistent thing.
Right, like, I know Viper's a good player. And so when I watch him do what he did in top lane with Mordekaiser, I'm like, that was so stupid. I know you don't think that was a good play. Like, I know you're not going to do that again. You know?
It's, I mean, it's, he even immediately tweeted about it.
Yeah, I mean, he tweeted about it, which, you know, just kind of drives this point home. But sometimes I watch a player do something, and I'm like, you're not that bad. I know you're not that bad.
Yeah, and I kind of like the tweet afterwards, because it's not one of those, we tried our best, we'll get him next time, really love the effort from the squad.
He was like, I should be banned.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, he completely owns that he just did something dumb.
Yeah, like, when you watch people, like, good players, like, sometimes, you know, great players go for this dive that you're like, I don't know what you were thinking, but like, okay, you're not going to do that again. I know you're not going to do that.
It's passes level. It's so dumb that you no longer believe that they think it was right.
Yeah.
But if it's just a moderate amount of dumb, you're like,
if you miss position,
I think that was good.
If you miss position, you know, a bunch, then I'm like, oh, that's a concern. Or if I'm constantly watching Viper kill himself in side lanes on plays, I'd be more concerned. But I know he's actually really good about going even in lane and making team fights on like Rivens and Aatroxes and stuff. That, like, when I watch that, I just laugh and I go, all right, go next. Yeah.
All right. Here's my take. Playoffs is going to be the most competitive we've had in years. So I'm actually very excited for a lot of the different teams. Mm-hmm. I do buy into the fact that FlyQuest is going to stay a pretty strong team. I'm fairly bought into Dignitas. I think that they're lost for similar reasons. Mm-hmm. The execution on their Rift Herald fight, you know, was so terrible that it was like, there's no way you think this was good. Yeah. You know, the TP from Johnson was so late and far away. Froggen rotated really slowly. Greg wasn't on
Greg
the same
just hung
page
out in the back
when
of the pit.
Yeah, when Hooney actually engaged and got, you know, multiple man head clap or whatever it's called, the set, the set ability, the slap together. So I still think that Dignitas, I have confidence in them. And last week on the dive, I talked about how I thought TSM would have a 2-0 week. This week, I didn't.
They did.
And they did. And I was not as concerned about TSM. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, TSM, I was not as concerned by some of their week one stuff because their first game I thought was terrible. I thought it was far below their play level. Game two, I thought was more, damn, TL, you're actually really good at not messing up with the team at Soul Point for four dragons in a row, right? And I felt strongly that no other team in the league would have actually been able to kind of have this mistake-free gameplay from that point, like TL did. TSM, I don't think that they were incredibly dominant, but I think that their second game against TL, their last two games this weekend, is clear signs of improvement. I still think that this team has some very talented players, and I think they are going to be good. So that leaves me thinking TL is going to be great by the end of the year. I think C9 is legitimately a great team. We have Dig, FlyQuest, and TSM that I have confidence in. And I don't even care if there's a sixth team that's good or not. That's already five teams that I think would be really competitive. And I am very excited for that potential to come to fruition. If it does, if you can end up in that situation where even the quarterfinals feel like the quarterfinalists can really challenge the semifinalists and the semifinalists are going to make for great, you know, third place and first place matches, that's hype. And I think that our league is shaping up to be very competitive, because we have surprising teams that are good.
I really hope a sixth place team does show up, because that's what I was about to ask, is like 100 Thieves, I think they have too many like holes. I mean, they could be the sixth place playoff team and be better than the other teams, but I'm still concerned about Ryoma. He has had some better performances this week that made me feel a lot better. But Meteos hasn't looked like himself yet this year, I don't think. And there's some other issues on that team. Immortals, not sold on. Ika does look like the problem everyone thought he would be, whereas Ryoma, I think, is stepping up more. CLG is on fire. Golden Guardians seems like a good top side of the map, actually. I think better than I anticipated. Not sold at all on the bot side. I think Keith has.
And that Soraka draft I thought was just horrible.
Yeah. G2 did it.
Yeah.
And then EG hasn't panned out quite on the level I was hoping when I put them in playoffs in my power ranking. So, like, finding someone to take that sixth place spot goes a long way to making the playoffs feel competitive. Because it always does suck when there's like a sixth place team that is clearly going to lose to the third place team and then they get 3-0'd. And then you don't even feel good about the team that did the 3-0 because you just never respected the team that they beat. You know, and that can sometimes, for me at least, drain some hype from playoffs. So I really hope a sixth place team does emerge as a quality team.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I'm just excited for a world where any of the top four teams, you know, anyone who makes semis could actually
can beat
win,
each other. Yeah.
Right. And I think we're getting closer to that. As much as we have been in this era of utter domination from TL, 2 years ago, it was like 3-0, 3-0 in the finals. Last year was 3-2, 3-2. You know, they were very close to losing both those series. I think C9 has improved a lot. I think TSM can get to that point. Dignitas is way better than I was thinking. There are more teams that I feel like could take down a TL unless they're absolutely on their A game, which if they are, great, then hopefully the level of the region is raised.
And then there's a very big question coming in. After Monday Night League, on Hotline League, there was a bit of TL news revealed. Mm. I was told by Hotline League, during Hotline League, to reference Hotline League when I talk about this news, but I want people to know that it was after Monday Night League as well.
Yes. Hotline League was after Monday Night League.
I feel like
yes. Which is on a Monday.
Yes.
I feel like night time. Yeah.
Yes. But it was the Broxah news, where Steve basically revealed that they were going to get a yes or no on Broxah on Thursday. So if that answer is no, big then oof. Are we going to see it? Like, then is it just C9? Because I agree with you yeah. that I've seen some promising things from other teams, but C9 has been at such a higher level.
Yeah, I think that becomes...
I mean, it is called the Midseason Invitational. Do we just, like, send them there? Do we give them the invitation as soon as Broxah gets denied?
We send them to Europe to train for the rest of the split.
Broxah just comes to MSI after not playing the whole split.
No, I'm joking. You always have to play the games. There's a lot of surprises.
I feel like you guys mentioned Hotline League more than I do. I always try and be like, oh, I was on this other show.
I don't think I mentioned Hotline League at all.
Kobe, maybe it's Kobe.
I think I've literally never mentioned it on the
You guys are always like, how come you didn't serve?
Yeah.
Someone said that one.
There's nothing wrong with plugging,
said this, Mark.
There's nothing wrong with plugging your products. Like, for instance,
on the JLXP.
Yesterday on the Josh Leeson Experience, it was actually 2 days ago, I recorded Quick Thoughts after the LCS. It was actually 30 minutes of thoughts.
Did you know that Josh Leeson is one of my favorite podcasters and he now creates the Josh Leeson Experience?
I didn't know that. Thank you. Yeah.
You know, yeah. And if you want to find out when it goes live, you can actually follow Josh Leeson on Twitter
to see
the Josh Leeson Experience.
Yeah.
And it's hosted by Josh Leeson.
Yeah. And tomorrow I'm going to do an episode with Keen Lamb for 10 more thoughts on 10 thoughts.
So there you go. That's a lot of thoughts.
It's so many thoughts.
That's like, is that 20 thoughts now?
Well, no, I give it's my 100. Thoughts on his thoughts. So it's 20 thoughts.
20 thoughts.
Maybe we'll do that.
But no more.
Anyway, there's nothing wrong with plugging your products, no, Mark.
I was just kidding. Like, how
so sell out on you Hotline guys League after Monday Night League, any thoughts on the Broxah issue?
How many?
Zero thoughts on that.
No thoughts?
I'm waiting till Thursday and then I'll give you some thoughts of they're doomed or because if let's say
so if it's a no, they're doomed.
I think so how long would it take to do a whole nother visa because they would have to restart from the beginning.
Oh, I don't know.
So like it takes months.
It's this Pandora's box as far as I know.
Yeah, it is a bit of a Pandora's box.
Because you're on a visa, but we don't need to get into details because it's like personal stuff.
No, I just mean like let's say Surefire doesn't come back. Or, I mean, Broxah doesn't come back and they have Surefire the rest of the split. Are they doomed?
Well, question.
I don't think they should be.
We're going to know the answer to this in like tomorrow. And like, I really hope Broxah is here by like week four.
Yeah.
But in the world where Broxah doesn't make it, do they just try and get another jungler? Like, Acadian's playing in Academy, right? Do they try and buy him out from Dignitas? I think that would be the play.
It's possible. And I mean,
Steve
also, like, I think part of the reason they are not as good right now is because they haven't had as much practice and because they are just saying, well, who cares? We don't have to fix our problems because Broxah is going
to
be coming soon, right? And that sort of mindset. But really, if TL had no Broxah ever, is this roster still not, like,
I think
four of the best players in the league.
They're definitely a playoff team.
Yeah,
high for sure.
And I mean, you know, even some of these other teams that we're talking about as potential contenders, do they not still have question marks like this, right? You know,
is Briggs so much better than
Surefire? Should TL not still be expected to compete for a championship even if they don't get Broxah? I mean, I think you can definitely make the argument that they should when you have four guys who were first team all.
Yeah.
LCS last split.
MVPs.
Oh, you only have four of the five all-stars in the league. Oh, I'm so sorry, right? I guess you don't need to make playoffs anymore. That's fine, right? No, the expectations should still be really high.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
it's like, well, you got LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris, but I mean, your third guy is like Chalmers. So yeah, like, really, can you make the finals?
Yeah.
Like, Udonis Haslam, like, what's that guy really done? So how possibly could they win a title? But yeah, they have a lot of stars.
Yeah, they have a lot of stars. All right, match of the week's coming up. We got C9 versus FlyQuest. C9 versus Dignitas. Those are kind of two really big ones that I think people are looking at as this the best performing teams right now. Do you guys think that? So Cloud9, I think everyone's looking at as the best performing team in the league right now. If Dignitas beats C9. Do you think Dignitas is the best team in the league? Like, is it just the winner of this match is the best team in the league?
I think it...
No.
No.
I don't...
Is supposed to elaborate, Mark? Go.
I was going to say, it depends how they lose. If they do the FlyQuest move of, like, Blabber goes for like some topside dive that just shouldn't work, and then he and Licorice die, and then like Hooney runs away with the game. I'm not going to be like, oh man, maybe Dig really is good, the way they force them to lose their minds. You know, like those kinds of plays, I think, do speak a lot more about the team making them, the like mistakes, than the team forcing it, maybe. So
yeah.
If Dig like go out there, make a bunch of plays, slam C9, and C9 is trying, and then it's an elongated game, kind of like they played versus TL, that mm-hmm. they then end up winning, that makes me feel better. And then I would consider maybe we've overhyped C9 and maybe they have more flaws, because they've won every early game by a significant amount. And even in an interview, Licorice mentioned that in scrims, they are so good that they always get ahead. And then they're really good at closing games out because they're always ahead. Mm-hmm. If they ever have a bad start in a game, they might actually not know how to come back as well as they did last summer when they had a ton of comeback mm-hmm. games. So I do have this other, like, I want to see them lose an early game and come back.
Yeah.
Which we haven't seen yet.
So the reason I say no, Dig will not be the best if they win, is because of the way Dig looked in their loss to FlyQuest. Mm-hmm. So Dig's loss to FlyQuest was a lot of poor overreach plays by Hooney, a lot of late TPs and overforced fights, like a lot of kind of panicky moves. And even if they force C9 into the same type of lopsided loss, that's still one each. Mm-hmm. So even in that situation, I wouldn't say Dig would be the best. So it's right now C9 is the best. They win, they will still be the best. If they lose, then they still might be the best, if that makes sense. But it's because everyone else has had the loss, and they haven't had it yet.
They're so much more dominant than the other teams, yes. Right? I buy that argument that losing to Dig just puts Dig in the conversation for being the best, right. Whereas right now it feels that C9 is definitively the best. 5 minutes faster than the league average as far as game time, have been very dominant. They actually have had, at no point in any game, a major deficit in any game in their four games. They have 100% bear control. They're first in basically every category of stats. And it's, I feel bad for mentioning this, but it's kind of funny. Only team with 100% bear control, C9. Only team with 0% bear control, CLG.
Yeah, makes sense. Did you see the ESPN article on the offseason?
No.
Oh, the trade
between
Dig, C9, and EG, right?
It was really cool because it was by Jacob Wolf. It was on ESPN. And it was more detail and like more sourced. Like it felt more official than any of the other esports trade articles. Like, well, it'll usually be some tweet where someone will say like, oh yeah, I hear Vulcan got bought out for $1.5 million. But this was like
more blow.
It was specific.
Blow. Yeah.
It had a quote from the Dig CEO.
Oh,
like it had
cool.
quotes from Jack. So like this stuff was verified. So basically the way the offseason worked from like Jack's perspective, and I also take this with a grain of salt, because like I think the timing.
Jack doing some of this?
Yeah, this is Jack. Like, it just so happens that this article is released after everything is validated, mm-hmm. right? But it's like, it's still credit in the sense. So what happened is they lost at Worlds. Jack then basically immediately started saying like, okay, what do I need to change? And he started shopping around to EG in New York, who had literally no contracts, like Svenskeren and some pieces. And because he was able to negotiate such a high rate for that, which in the article, I believe, was $2 million to get that package of players, Vulcan wasn't available. Like Vulcan wasn't available for anyone, but he had this like sack of cash and he said, you know, I'm going to put it forward to my team, $1.5 million to get Vulcan out of Dignitas. And Dig was like, "That you can't say no to that. Like that's just so much.
Yeah.
Sure. And they've managed to find Aphramous, so they did their own thing that was looking successful. But that was like—
Everyone has their price.
That's actually how it went. Like Jack got EG because EG had no contracts and wanted to make a splash. Mm. Then he was able to manipulate his way into Vulcan, and that held up everything. Like if that Vulcan thing didn't happen, a lot of the other dominoes of the offseason wouldn't have happened. I just thought it was really cool that like—
It is really cool.
Jack decided so early on, like, I need to get this guy. And I think in past years or like past iterations of esports, you just wait for Vulcan to be out of contract, mm-hmm. right? But needed to win now, and he had the Svenskeren thing, and he had the plethora of junglers, and he just like, he played his cards. So it was cool.
Value of a good academy system.
Yeah.
It allows you to have backup players and players to move, because Kumo was a part of that deal too.
Yeah. They have actually gotten so much value out of that academy system mm-hmm. because, you know, there has been so much interest in their academy players, even buyouts for current academy players that they have. You know, I've heard lots of talk about
players they brought up
in the past. You
like
know.
They brought in Zazel for Smoothie
exactly.
and now they've sold him later for mm-hmm. more money. So
Yeah, pretty cool. All right. So we got some Twitter questions here. The first one coming in from @Kube, a bunch of fours and a one. With TL finding moderate success with Surefire and Broxah's delay due to Visa, do you think there's a world in which Broxah doesn't start simply because of existing synergy between Surefire and the team?
Nope.
What if they get Broxah the day of the finals? There's got to be a breakpoint.
Okay.
Yes.
So I agree with you. No, like in almost any situation. But if they make finals with Surefire,
yeah,
they'll start with Surefire.
So if it's week 9, they still go Broxah. And I feel that.
Yep.
That's your breakpoint?
Yep.
I think even
quarterfinals.
Yeah,
if you're in quarters, it means you didn't get a bye, and you're not like if they didn't even get a bye with that roster, they're probably not 100% confident to actually like make it all the way through and win, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And then you take the swing at winning the finals,
and if they you're going to use them in summer no matter what, anyways. So
did you guys point at Kobe this much when he's in the middle?
Absolutely.
Like both of you are just like you're gonna.
That's why he likes it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. He's like, ooh, it's me.
Yeah.
But. If they got a bye and they're starting in semis, then I don't think they use Broxah.
Ah, okay. Cool. That's your breakpoint.
Yes.
Okay.
That's my breakpoint, which is probably insulting to Surefire.
Broxah's just, he's been to World Finals. Like,
yeah.
He's so experienced. And I think this is why I've switched my opinion to Mark's side. You can still start with Broxah. And if you lose, you'll put Surefire in game 2.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in this crazy world where TL's like finals with Surefire, and they hadn't made some midseason trade for another jungler.
Mm-hmm.
I just really hope we get Broxah. Like, he's such a big star. I was so excited to see him in the LCS.
Yep.
Just please.
And you want more competitive teams, right? Yeah. You just want the skill in the league to be up.
Yep.
All right. Good question, Coob. All right, we got the next one from Shemchuk Paul. He says, laughing at that.
That's what it sounds like. Shemchuk.
It's Paul Shemchuk.
Well, his name's Paul Shemchuk, so his
I know,
tag
but
is
it's
Shemchuk
the,
Paul.
The yeah. fact that the
Zimmerman Mark.
Yeah.
But the last name coming first when it's a
that's his Twitter tag. Okay. And I'm reading what's on the paper here, Mark.
I like it.
Paul Shemchuk's name.
Yeah, I'm gonna flame.
Yeah.
All right. Longtime listener, first time question asker. Might be the last time after Mark flamed his name. With many of y'all entering your 30s.
And the new
hashtag Bud Light sponsorship. Have the demographics of the LCS viewership shifted? If so, how does this affect the content and segments you all make?
So I'm 28.
Mark is not entering. I turned 31 in September. And I think most of the casters like are older than me.
Yeah, I'm 32.
You're 32. Freak is what, 33? Riv is like 34
Riv
or something
like that.
Riv is like 3 years
older. Freak's like half year older. Kobe's same age.
Or a little bit older.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think I'm... Mm-hmm. The youngest of the full... No, Pastry is around the same age as me, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, most of us are already in our 30s. I guess Mark is entering.
Getting there.
You're getting there. Does it change the demographics? So this is a completely unverified opinion because I'm not actually sure if this is 100% true. But I have heard in the past and read that alcohol companies will not sponsor leagues without doing their own research of like... X percentage of the viewers are above age, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to put their ads on something where they don't think they're advertising to enough people that are of a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, and maybe you guys do, what the actual demographic numbers are that made Bud Light come in now, or if this is something that the demographics have always been like this, but they just didn't realize it and kind of hadn't picked up on it. But I mean... In general, I know gaming demographic
is aging,
not because there are not lots of new young gamers, but just because, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it was much less popular. So mm-hmm. now there are tons and tons of 30 and 40 year old gamers who grew up playing games and they're being marketed to more heavily because guess what? 30 year olds and 40 year olds have way more disposable income mm-hmm. than people who are in school.
Yeah. I mean, we are probably the closest, like the first wave of hardcore gamers. You had like the Atari people and like I bought Pong, you know, in like the 70s, and those like people were out there, but we might be the first generation that grew up with video games as extensively as like everyone has a home console now. Kind of where I think that was our era. I thought I heard somewhere once again unverified the league demographic was also aging. When it was the 2012 season, like, you know, it was a lot younger of a fan base. And
right.
a lot of those people have grown up and still watch the league.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been necessarily replenished with a bunch of 12 to 16-year-olds. It's more
16 so
to 20, whatever.
This is off of, like, anecdotal evidence. But I remember it was, I am Katowice in Poland in, early 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And IMs, for those of you who don't know, were these events that hosted like multiple games.
Mm-hmm.
And the stage setup was like, it was a big like triple stage. So they had a main stage and then they had like two side stages. And League was on in the center and StarCraft was on in the left. And you could see the crowd age as you moved. It's because I think like first generation esport was StarCraft,
mm-hmm.
right? That's where the hardcore people and those people who'd been with it and they were watching StarCraft. And then League is the one that got a whole new generation of esports. And I think at least in America, like Fortnite has gotten yet another new generation into esports. I have watched some StarCraft. You were like a semi-pro, pro StarCraft player at times.
Yeah, I mean, I was Grandmaster. But,
yeah, you were a pro, but you were a pro World of Warcraft player. But like either way, yes, I do think the LCS viewership has definitely gotten older because people have stuck with it.
Mm.
I do think we still do have some of the younger fans as well.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, there. I believe as well there is something in the Bud Light sponsorship that Azale mentioned that does require you have a certain average viewership age. So yeah, it's a sign that we do have a more mature audience, which I think is cool because it means esports can be around for a while.
I mean, look at a lot of the sponsorships in general. They're like Kia for cars and State Farm and... Yep. Bud Light, we're not getting Kids Bop and like, you know, I don't,
Kids Bop.
Where's TikTok sponsorship?
This is like the most boomer take. We're not getting these newfangled things like
who here watches TikTok
and lollipops.
Who here watches TikTok?
I don't even have it installed.
I really should.
I know I'm mega popular, but I just because
you're the youngest.
No, yeah. my girlfriend has it on her phone. She'll just watch it.
Oh, so you don't watch TikTok.
I don't have it on my phone.
You like shoulder watch TikTok.
This is like by proxy. It doesn't even
but
count.
To be fair.
So you're still a boomer like us.
I know a lot of the memes.
Okay.
I know Rabbit Scout.
You're in touch with the kids. Good for you, Mark.
And is it the kids who are out of touch?
To answer the second part of the question, which is actually most of the question we just started talking about if we were older, it says, if so, how does this affect content and segments you all make? I don't think it actually affects it that much because, you don't want to like affect the rating and essentially like you don't want to alienate the younger audience. So I don't really think it would change too much the kind of content we make. I think that almost all LCS content is appropriate for all ages. And I think for the most part, we would want to keep it like that.
Mm-hmm.
What I think it does affect more is just some of the sponsors that will be interested in being a part of us and maybe having more of like at live events, maybe you have more of a wide variety of things, right? Maybe you have, you know, more Bud Light stuff where, you know, people who are over 21 can drink and blah, 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 blah. But I don't think it's going to change our content that much.
I think... For me on the countdown stuff, there are times where we're like, is that a dated reference? You know, like we all kind of do the boomer check and we fail it sometimes.
We need to hire a 12-year-old and
to run ideas by. Are you entertained?
And everyone can just be like really, you know.
That was longer than 20 seconds.
Your self-worth is just completely attached to if this kid thinks
we're
cool
redoing
or
the
not.
Countdown, we're redoing the countdown to only be a minute long segments at most.
Little Jimmy, is this a funny joke?
30,
please.
30 TikToks in a row.
I need this job,
countdown.
Little Jimmy.
But I mean, like, I do think it affects that type of content. You know, we do think about those kinds of things, like, but that's just general stuff. You do keep your demographic in mind, even regardless of that. There's always those kinds of things going
on. We're hanging on here. We're trying not to age out, you know?
Yeah. I was going to go somewhere else with that, but now I've been distracted.
I got nothing else to say.
All right. Well, that's it.
We perfect, do consider it a little note. Bit is what I was thinking.
Yeah. Perfect note to end on here. Thank you, special guest, Joshua Leesman of the Joshua Leesman
the middle
Experience.
Seat. I don't know. I think...
I felt like you progressively got smaller throughout the episode.
Well, I did accidentally lower my chair.
So you went lower.
Time.
But like, if we sit up all the way, you know, should we go down too? Should we just... I'll join you down here.
Oh, I can't go up. That's as high as it goes up.
I want to go in my microphone. All right, this is a perfect outro here. That's going to do it for this episode of The Dive. Thanks for joining us. You can catch us again this Friday for Academy Rush. The LCS countdown is going to be Saturday starting at 1:30 Pacific time. We'll be followed by EG versus CLG at 2 p.m. See you there.
Can't wait till you're back next week, Jet.
He's a special guest. Few and far between.